when I arrived this morning saying he was going to be checking out the sound system in the courtrooms, I said, how long have you worked for this court? He said, 14 years. I asked him, how many different sound systems have we had in the last 14 years? And he couldn't tell me off the top of his head, but the point is, if you can't hear us, too bad, we'll tell the lawyers to speak up because, you know, modern technology can't capture the acoustics in this courtroom. So, sorry about that. We would urge the council to take note of our traffic light system. When the yellow light comes on, you have 2 minutes, and when the red light comes on, you may conclude your argument unless you are answering a question from the court. We have also read the briefs and record excerpts. We probably have not read the entire record, and we appreciate record cites when you need to rely on them. First case of the morning is number 14-30801, Bronner versus Cootey. And we'll hear from Ms. Glazer.
Good morning. May it please the court. This is an Eighth Amendment case involving a prisoner alleging that a number of different prison officials have violated his Eighth Amendment rights, claiming that they acted with deliberate indifference to his serious medical needs. There is no dispute that he had serious medical needs and that the defendants knew about it. What is disputed is a legal dispute, not a factual one, is whether the treatment that he received and is receiving, which has been extensive, amounts to deliberate indifference. Originally, he did not distinguish the conduct of the defendants. He didn't do so really until briefing, but there are two assistant wardens who are accused of doing the same thing, which is allegedly nothing in response to his supposedly direct complaints, though he was never really too clear on what it is he told them or when. We know that.
Do you have any speculation as to why all the judges of the Middle District recused?
I don't, Your Honor. Judge Jackson didn't give reasons.
I know. It was a six-month gap between two filings, and then all of a sudden they all recused. Maybe counsel on the other side knows. And the other question I have is, was there any indication the magistrate judge issued a report and recommendation that the complaint be, summary judgment be granted for the defendants, and then Judge Afric about 10 days later reversed that, but was there any communication between Judge Afric and the parties before, maybe it's more than 10 days, but before he changed his mind or changed that idea?
No, not that I'm aware of, Your Honor. There was no communication with Judge Afric before his decision came out. Shortly thereafter, we had a status conference to talk about trial dates, but as far as I know, he didn't have any communication before the order came out.
Right.
One asked him after he just has basically that one sentence statement that there's a fact issue. No one asked him to clarify what the fact issues were?
No, Your Honor. It's hard to ask for a reconsideration or a written reasons when the rules don't really provide for such a thing. Our clock was ticking for this appeal. And
a lot of people ask for versus reconsideration, just a clarification in the district court, but
right.
Why shouldn't we just remand and ask him to identify the fact issues that were unmentioned in his order?
I don't think you need to. I can't find any fact issues. There are legal disputes about whether conduct amounts to deliberate indifference, but a dispute about whether treatment was good enough, whether pain medication was strong enough, those are not material fact disputes because they do not bear on the deliberate indifference question.
Well, let's just consider what is cited in Mr. Bronner's brief, which is that each of the three, I personally am focusing on the doctors, each of the doctors said, I prescribed pain medication, I prescribed regular wound dressing changes. And he purports to cite the medical records, which presumably were kept on a daily basis. We haven't been into those thoroughly, but presumably, and then do not identify wound dressing changes on many days or necessarily identify when the pain medication was administered. So what are we to make of that?
Well, there are both pain administration charts and wound management charts in the medical record. They are not complete. The medical record is not the easiest thing to read, but they are referenced in both briefs. But a missed wound dressing every now and then is not indicative of deliberate indifference either, nor is it attributable to the doctors. Mr. Bronner makes it very clear that the doctors were not changing his dressings daily. It was the nurses who were not sued. This is very similar to the situation that was presented in the Stewart case, where the same kind of claims were made. With regard to the pain medication, again, there's no dispute. Each doctor did prescribe pain medication, and Mr. Bronner's complaint is that it wasn't strong enough. He wanted a narcotic, Lortab.
Now, let me ask you a question. Since these ulcers were below the waist, and he's a paraplegic, is there evidence in the record that I saw something about he can't feel anything below the waist? Could you be in pain if you can't feel anything, or can you feel surface wounds?
The surface wounds he was complaining of, he could not feel. The Dr. Collins referred him to a neurologist, Dr. Barkmeyer, who did say that he did not feel the wounds that he was complaining he felt. Now, there are residual effects of his actual spinal cord injury, which could cause some pain, which was
referred pain or sort of phantom pain, right?
Yes, it's similar. It's similar to that, which was treatable with Neurontin, which he was prescribed. Trying to find the record citation. I have it here somewhere for Dr. Barkmeyer's findings are. In the record at page 1638, paragraph 16, that was Dr. Collins's affidavit. And in the medical record part of the record at 799 and 711. But the doctors did have doubts as to all along as to whether Mr. Bronner felt the pain he was claiming he was feeling. Not that he was in some pain, but it was more attributable to the fevers and things that were associated with infections, which the record does reflect would come and go. He was treated with antibiotics and wound dressing changes and physical therapy and all kinds of different things, and he would get better, and then he would get worse, and then he would get better, and he would get worse. That was his deposition testimony, and that's what had happened since he was originally injured.
Did he have a compromised immune system apart from being paraplegic?
I don't know.
The record doesn't say.
It may. I'm not clear on that. I do know that he has been suffering ulcers since his original injury, which was, I think, in 2005.
Was that in the prison, or was that?
He was incarcerated at the time. I think it was a motor vehicle accident. He didn't sue about it. So I'm not exactly sure. So with regard to the three doctors, they each did provide treatment. There is no indication that any of them ignored him. And the allegation that's in plaintiff's brief that they intentionally treated him incorrectly is only backed up by the conclusion that they must have been treating him incorrectly because he still has this condition. That's, again, his testimony in his deposition, belies that statement by saying he would get better and he would get worse and he would get better, and it was just this cycle, along with the testimony of from the doctors that he started becoming non-responsive to antibiotics, so they had to change the antibiotics. The wound care records reflect that, depending on his condition, the wound dressing orders would be different. Sometimes it was once a day, sometimes it was twice a day. But he has been dissatisfied with his treatment. He disagrees with the doctor's conclusions and with their actions. He doesn't believe that he's been treated well enough. But none of these things amount to deliberate indifference. A prime example of that is there's repeated requests for a slide board, which is a device that all of the doctors in their medical judgment says he doesn't need because he gets assistance from orderlies and nurses to get out of bed. And plaintiff's deposition at record 1660, page 21, lines 20 through 25, he concedes he gets assistance getting in and out of bed. So he's clearly, in this instance with the slide board, just challenging the exercise of medical judgment by these medical professionals. He doesn't need this device because he's getting help. The same thing with the turning. The plaintiff alleges that prison policy dictated that nurses were supposed to turn him regularly. However, he was capable of turning himself. He had a trapeze over his bed, and he did. He didn't turn himself as often as the doctors told him to.
How much did he weigh?
I'm not sure how much he weighs.
Obese?
No, not at all. He's a small guy. I'm not sure how tall he is, but he's pretty thin. One of the things he keeps complaining about is weight loss arising from nausea and things like that that were related to some medication he was on. I should mention the plaintiff mentions in their brief that he was deprived of an air mattress, a custom bed mattress. That is not in this lawsuit at all. The plaintiff had a custom air mattress at the time he filed suit. He did not mention it until much, much later. And when he was talking about a Rojo cushion, which is they mention it at pages 34 and 36 of plaintiff's brief, which is 5759 in the electronic one. A Rojo cushion, that's a wheelchair pad, not at issue in this lawsuit.
What about the showers?
The shower allegation is a perfect example of a reasonable response from prison officials to an alleged condition posing a substantial risk of serious harm. The plaintiff alleges the showers were unconstitutionally unsanitary, essentially, and that the defendants were deliberately indifferent to it.
I thought the records show they were cleaned twice a day.
It does. The plaintiff disputes that. He says that a nurse told him never to use the shower. That's hearsay, obviously not admissible on a motion for summary judgment. The doctors, I think it was Dr. Collins, testified the showers are cleaned twice a day with a Clorox-based solution. In addition, Mr. Bronner was given the opportunity to shower before the rest of the offenders. He was also given his own personal spray bottle of disinfectant for use at his pleasure. He chooses not to use the shower, but to hold these defendants personally liable for money damages for the cleanliness of the shower in light of their response to his complaints. Whether it was unconstitutionally, unsanitary or not, their responses were reasonable and no case has been cited showing otherwise. Did you have a question?
No, ma'am, I don't think so.
And I think the final claim is this claim of supervisory liability. It's not very clear. It's difficult to understand how the the allegations plaintiff is attempting to make tend towards a personal involvement of each of these doctors, but yet also trying to hold them liable under a theory of supervisory liability for the actions in it or inactions of the nurses. There is no allegation pleaded or proven in opposition to the motion for summary judgment that brings that beyond a claim of negligence or vicarious liability, which is obviously not allowed on a motion for summary judgment in a 1983 claim. Absent other questions, I think I'll save for rebuttal. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Okay, Mr. Suba.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Christopher Suba. I'm here on behalf of Mr. Brawner. This case presents what I think is a rather unique issue because it is trying to dispose of an issue, the issue of qualified immunity, which the Supreme Court has found unquestionably to be a question of law. However, it is based upon a series of precedent underlying case law in this court as well as in other circuit courts that applies a fact-based analysis to whether or not these officers were acting with deliberate indifference to the medical needs of Mr. Brawner. As Ms. Glazer stated, there is no dispute as to the seriousness of his injuries, the seriousness of his medical condition, and there is no dispute that he has the constitutional right to adequate medical treatment.
At what point did you get involved in the case?
We became involved several months ago, shortly before filing the appeal was filed to this court, Your Honor.
Okay, so you weren't involved in the deposition?
No, ma'am.
Okay.
The first thing that I would suggest to this court is that this is, and this has been briefed, that this is not an appealable judgment. I'm going to assume that the court wants to hear far more than that and wants to get to perhaps the facts of the case and not spend much time on me sitting here talking about whether or not this is in fact appealable.
I think that would be a fair...
Yes, ma'am. But I do suggest, and we have stated this in our brief, that the lower court denied their motion for summary judgment and stated very explicitly that the record created or contained facts that created genuine issues of material fact upon which a reasonable jury could find deliberate indifference in this situation. You spoke to her about whether or not there was any reason for that judgment, or if anyone requested any written reasons. We did not. We were not involved in that end. Perhaps we would have, but we do feel that while the record is complete as far as the medical records are concerned, there are very, very important, very significant issues surrounding discovery that we feel should be completed before any decision is made as to whether or not these officers are entitled to any qualified...
It seems like there was far more discovery in this case than this type of case typically gets. What specifically did your client not get access to that he needs?
The client had unfettered access to his medical records. There's no doubt about that.
Were depositions?
The only deposition that was taken was his. He has not taken any depositions, nor was he in any physical or mental condition to do so. He did propound a lot of written discovery. There's no doubt about that. He has, you know, time on his side, and he is able to put together written discovery and ask certain questions, and that was responded to. He did receive, again, like I said, the record. I know you haven't had an opportunity to review it. It's thousands of pages long. It is the complete medical record. There are no expert doctors that can, or experts that can testify surrounding whether or not the physicians were responding to his medical needs in an appropriate manner. not to take anything away from the physicians or the officers, but this particular type of wound care, this particular type of infection is very aggressive, and it is very common in someone who is a paraplegic. They are not able to move the way that you and I are able to move around, so there is going to be the onset of these bed sores in almost all cases.
Now, you said, I mean, Ms. Glazer suggested that he was injured in 2005. Do you happen to know?
I believe that's the case. Again, he was...
So for some reason, he didn't get the bed sores until around 2011, huh?
He did not get the bed sores until he was, became a bit more immobilized in prison.
But he was in prison the whole time?
Yes, I believe so, yes.
Well, I mean, I just, you know, just... knowing what I've seen on TV, I mean, surely couldn't he develop upper body strength so as to be able to move himself around somewhat?
I would assume so, yes, Your Honor. The concern that I have is that these particular type of sores, they don't necessarily develop right away, but the problem is once they do develop, once you get one single sore, once you develop a bed sore, you have an infection that sets in. And at that point, it is tantamount to any success at recovery.
It's very difficult to treat these, though. Don't you agree with that?
I think that it may be difficult. I would agree that it may be difficult to treat, but I do not think that it's impossible to treat, and I do not think that it gets to the point that it is now.
I guess the problem is you're not a doctor and I'm not a doctor, and we have three doctors who all said we did what we could, we're doing what we can for him.
But those doctors are the doctors who are defendants in this case. Again, I think that discovery on the issue, allowing for an independent medical examiner to come in and explain to the court or to us exactly what would be the most proper method of care. We talk about all of these separate issues in the brief, the pain medications, the slide board, the wound care, the air mattress. Those are all things that are very, very, very essential to his recovery. They call it minutia and that it's trivial. There is nothing trivial about missing wound care 235 times over the course of 3 years. That is not minutia. That is
three years?
Over 3 years, yes, Your Honor. That is deliberate indifference. That there is no question in my mind that is deliberate indifference.
What discovery did you request by you? I'm of course being your client. Request in the district court that he didn't receive.
I don't believe that the record shows that he did not receive anything that he didn't request. Again, Your Honor, I think most of the information that was requested was medical records from outside facilities, maybe that he had gone to, medical records from the facilities, from the prison itself. It was confined to what is in the record before you. Again, like I said, it is mostly just years of administrative procedures, ARPs, the disciplinary rules of for LSP or the or like I said, or the medical records. He was not able to take the depositions of any of the defendants. He was not able to take any depositions of any witnesses that could corroborate his allegations. There are clearly issues of fact surrounding whether or not he explained or voiced these concerns to Warden Coody or Warden Norris. They've suggested that he did not. They've suggested that he did not disclose any of this to them, which there are people that could corroborate his story there, or we could just have them depose.
Well, what they said about what to be a little more precise, Ms. Coody was only there for 2 months during the period covered by his complaint. And then she was transferred to another unit.
Yes, Your Honor. But in the original brief, they suggest that, or in her affidavit, she suggests that she never spoke to him. But in their reply brief, they point to no instance where he can say when he actually spoke to them.
But all I'm saying is the most that she could have been deliberately indifferent for was 2 months.
Perhaps 2 months within a situation like this could be 2 years worth of treatment. 2 months of disregard is equivalent to a year's worth of setback. Getting to the specific allegations that we have made in brief that we find are issues of fact that this court is being asked to consider in determining whether or not these officers or the doctors acted with any deliberate indifference towards Mr. Bronner. I want to first, like I said, get to the wound care dressing. Again, you suggested that you're not a doctor. I'm not a doctor either. I have personal experience with someone who had these particular type of ulcers. My brother had spina bifida, or has spina bifida, and has had it since birth. And I've seen him go from a tiny sore to a grandiose infection to a healthy human being. So it's possible. It's very difficult to treat. I do not dispute that. But it is not impossible to treat if it's being treated and handled in a manner in which you or I would expect that to be handled. And that is not how it was handled in this case.
That may well be the case. And so that brings us to the Stewart opinion, because when you're in prison, you're at the mercy of the government, and the standard is deliberate indifference, not medical malpractice. So how do you distinguish the Stewart case?
Well, in the Stewart case, we weren't talking about the same length of time. In the Stewart case, it did involve decubitus ulcers.
That fellow died in 6 months or less.
Yes, ma'am. But the time frame that there was alleged to be some type of indifference was a very short period of time. And the court found that they were not deliberately indifferent. They found that, or this court, I'm sorry. They found that they were not deliberately indifferent, but it was a compressed period of time.
But the evidence says when he got to the hospital, it was the worst case of bed sores that whoever was at the hospital had ever seen.
Well, I can tell you that in this case, this would be the worst case of decubitus ulcers or bed sores that you'd ever seen. It is, his condition has progressed to a point now where he is effectively rotted from the inside out. There's no distinguishing tissue between his urethra and his lower body cavity where perhaps, not to get too graphic, but almost his anus.
Is that in the record?
No, ma'am. That is something that has come to light since the record was created. That is just in conversations that I've had with Mr. Bronner since recently. And he's set to be released from prison in, I believe, at the end of next month, at which point, ideally, he would be able to get some type of medical care that arguably would allow him to regain some of, essentially get rid of the infection. I mean, that's the number one concern, is eliminating the infection. You cannot eliminate the infection if you are not treating the superficial wounds. You cannot get rid of the infection if you are allowing these wounds to fester and progress to a point where they're almost incurable. In this instance, they talk about the slide board being, again, useless. He can pull himself up out of bed and all that stuff. They rely upon nurses to turn him, nurses to help him in and out of bed, the same nurses that are not changing his wounds, the same nurses that refuse to change his wounds pursuant to those orders.
It's very pitiful, no doubt about it, but is he getting any worse treatment than he'd get in an average nursing home or an average hospital? Because there's no nursing home or hospital where you're getting instantaneous response unless you're, in cardiac arrest.
I believe that it would be a sad state of affairs if he were in a private facility and someone came to me and said, we're sorry that, we didn't get around to changing his wounds for the last 29 days. That, to me, is If you did it...
Do you have that example how many times in the record? How many examples? Because, again, I saw your summaries.
It's over 7 pages of my brief, Your Honor.
I understand that, but I don't recall, although I had a look at it rather quickly, seeing a 29-day complete gap in changes of dressings or wound care.
It was 25 days was the longest.
And what period was that several years ago?
It was between 2011 and 2014.
I mean, that's a pretty broad period, but that's impossible because he would have been going to the bathroom, he would have been bathing himself in bed, he would have been showering. Presumably these are removable bandages.
Yes, they are.
Not possible that they had the same bandages on him for 25 days, given the normal activities of a human being's life.
Well, I think it's very possible, and I think that's the scary thing about it, is that if it is possible and if it was allowed to happen, then, I mean, and again, would we like to think that in a perfect world that that did not happen?
Well, let me ask you this. Does the record affirmatively reflect that this didn't happen, or is there a gap in the record keeping?
There's a gap in the record.
Yeah. Gap in the record keeping.
Yes.
Okay.
So, yes, I would like to think that there is no scenario in this world where someone would allow something like that to happen. But there are gaps in the records that, at this point, all we can infer from that is either one, that the records were not kept properly, or two, that he did not receive the treatment that he was supposed to receive. Either way, there is a dispute there as to whether or not something occurred or did not occur. And again,
the showers and the wound care were the responsibility of the nurses. What's your evidence that the doctors knew about this from their review of the logs or just their interactions with the patient?
If the doctors were treating the patients consistent with their own specific orders, they would have had to have come in contact with the patient over those periods of time.
Is there any record of how often they visited him?
There are gaps in the record that show perhaps where one of the physicians did not see him for, a period in excess of, say, 15 days up to 30 days. It's not routine, I'm not suggesting that, but there are instances where there are larger gaps in actually seeing one of the treating physicians. Now, in seeing... To your point, if the physician is going to treat him in a manner that we find acceptable, if the doctor is going to treat him and adhere to his own orders or see him, even if he saw him on a weekly basis, it would be apparent to that physician whether or not he was receiving appropriate wound care, whether or not he was receiving the bathing. I mean, there's information in the record that indicates, foul smells, pus. I mean, those are not things that are present whenever people are receiving wound care on a daily basis. Those are not things that are present whenever people are being bathed or showered. Yes, it may be a bit of a burden because he can't go stand up in a shower stall and take a shower, and he may be confined to bathing in bed if those are the two options that this gentleman's given. But if he's not getting that, the physicians know that he's not getting that, then that is deliberate indifference on their part. We're not suggesting that they're liable for what the nurses did or didn't do. There's no such thing as vicarious liability in these situations. We're not trying to impute the negligence of these or the deliberate indifference of these nurses to the doctors. We're saying that the doctors in and of themselves are not paying attention to the medical needs of Mr. Bronner or to the patients to a point that it amounts to deliberate indifference. They're allowing these things to happen. And I only have a minute and a half left, and does Judge Jones have a question for me?
No.
I want to, and I know that the court has read the briefs, but I want to ensure that the court understands that if you take the slide board, that is one piece of the spectrum. If you take the air mattress, that is one piece of the spectrum. If you take the pain medications, that is one piece of the spectrum. Each of those things individually don't really seem like that big of a deal, and they seem like something that you could get past. And I don't disagree with that. But when you have all of that together, when you have someone who is effectively rotting from the inside out, being denied pain medication, or being prescribed methadone, which causes nausea, which results in more pain that he can't actually feel, or when you have someone who's being denied a slide board, something that would allow him to move in and out of bed without disrupting his bandages, without tearing his wounds, tissue that's already very, very susceptible to being torn, whenever you have ineffective wound care, when you have a bandage that sits there for several days at a time, when someone goes to take that off, it rips whatever's healed. So you're never going to progress beyond that. You're never going to progress beyond that. So in closing, I think that when you take all of those facts together in total, there can be no other finding by this court other than that there was deliberate indifference on behalf of these actors.
All right, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Glazer.
Thank you, Your Honor. Methadone hasn't been prescribed since well before the statute of limitations cut off. It was in 2010 or something, not part of this lawsuit, the methadone prescription itself. He was prescribed Lortab and Advil and Aleve and all sorts of other
Those wouldn't help a sick tummy, but...
Phenergan. He had an almost consistent prescription for Phenergan on an as-needed basis for years. So, yeah, he's gotten plenty of treatment for nausea. The optimal standard of care that the American Medical Association sets or that the doctors set for themselves or that prison policy sets are completely irrelevant to this inquiry. The question is deliberate indifference. And a gap in medical records is not necessarily indicative of a gap in treatment, particularly when what is notably absent from the plaintiff's actual pleaded allegations is that he was ignored for 25 or 29 days. That's not pleaded. Plaintiff, since the very beginning of this lawsuit, has said he has gotten improper treatment. It has been inadequate. All of the defendants have collectively acted with deliberate indifference, proven by the fact that he, in his opinion, has not gotten better. But as he testified, as the record shows, he does. Wounds heal and they come back. It's part of the condition. They are treated. He's treated with antibiotics, with wound care dressings and all those things.
You're saying the record will show that some of these wounds healed or got considerably better and then deteriorated again?
Absolutely. In fact, in his deposition, he specifically testified that the first wound he had gotten in 2010 or 2011 had healed at the time he gave his deposition. They did. They got better and worse. He called it a cycle, which would be an accurate description. With regard to discovery, Judge Smith, you're right. The plaintiff did not ask for any additional discovery to respond to the qualified immunity defense. Generalized requests for depositions without any indication as to what specific fact is in dispute that they want to request is not appropriate in a qualified immunity case. I should also note that only Dr. McMurdo is still at Angola. Dr. Collins retired, Dr. Roundtree transferred to a different facility, and so when we're talking about his current condition, neither of them have anything to do with it, Drs. Collins or Roundtree, and the plaintiff fired Dr. McMurdo quite some time ago, something most inmates do not have the luxury of doing. He did fire Dr. McMurdo and has a new treating physician at his emphatic request. He also testified about that in his deposition. With Warden Coody, those 2 months, what happened during those 2 months? I mean, not only were they, 2 months in a very vague amount of time, but what did happen? According to his ARP grievance, when they were evacuated at a different facility, Assistant Warden Cootie made sure that his dressings were continuing to be changed. Does not sound like deliberate indifference. And Assistant Warden Norris didn't even come until after he'd filed his ARP. And Warden Norris, all he did was investigate the ARP, which he did, and respond to it in a way that was not satisfactory to the plaintiff. Overall, this vast record doesn't need to be clarified by Judge Afric. Disputes of fact are not material. These minor disputes about, you know, whether the pain medication was good enough or whatever, they're not material. The legal question that this court can answer and should answer now is whether or not these defendants should be held personally liable for deliberate indifference. And we respectfully suggest they should not. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. We have your argument. Thank you.